Hi, everyone. This is Eric Anderson, host of the YXC Underground podcast, and I'm sitting across from my dear friend, Lisa Gregg. We are at the Underground Cafe in Saskatoon. It's Friday, March
22nd.
It's my dad's birthday tomorrow. I really should have been better on that. And both of us have, well, you've walked here. We're still not at the walking stage yet, the walking with Lisa, but we're sitting in a new location. I guess why we're at a new location is that when we last left our listeners, you were about to embark on a new job.
Yeah.
Can I ask you how it's going?
Sure can. It's wonderful. Honestly, it's like trusting, when you just trust yourself to take the leaps, what's to regret? You know what I mean? And so I'm loving it, and it is the change that like I needed and I wanted. And then it's the landing space that I had hoped, you know, that it would be. So yeah, it's been going really good. Steep learning curve. I'm glad that my team has patience and, you know, are there, but, it's been fun. Yeah.
You're at Rock and Bloom, for people that don't know, and it does look like fun.
Yeah, it is fun. There's definitely like a culture there of like, you know, of course, you know, get work done, but also have fun while you're doing it. And it is nice. It just, we spend a lot of time at work, right? Like as working humans, we spend a lot of time at work. And I think it's important to have that perspective of making sure that work is also serving you and you're not just serving your workplace. Just like how novel.
And yet so many of us struggle with that. So,
oh well, don't we? I think that you know, comes from many different things, but even a salary alone, like sometimes we just get caught up in like what we're paid or letters behind our name, or oh, like we talked about even last podcast, we should be doing this because this is what I went to school for, this is where my experience is, and those narratives that we make decisions on based on things that we tell ourselves that we think other people might think, which we need to stop doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like we could just keep going with that. Lisa, what is on your mind these days?
Oh my gosh. I as always, right? It's like game time decisions when I'm walking here. I'm like, what are we going to talk about while we sit? I think it's like actually continues on with the conversation we were just having because of, again, while I'm doom scrolling in bed where all of my great ideas come, but it was like a meme or just like a statement that was shared about, I'm gonna like take a second for it to come to me, but it was talking about how we are really, in summary, it's like our lack of tolerance towards people's like indifference of us, in the sense of we are constantly thinking that everyone likes us. And if they're not showing that outward like and support and like hype, we immediately go to this narrative of they don't like us, rather than actually, I think it's about people being indifferent, which is normal, because thinking about our own lives, how busy are we and caught up in our own heads? We don't have time to think about everyone. Yet when it's about us, we're so quick to center ourselves in other people's stories. Right? And like, oh, they didn't look at me, or they didn't smile at me, they must not like me, or, you know, what's going on? And I've just been like really thinking all of that over, and my like 20-year-old self, probably even my almost entire 30-year-old self, and that concept of, you know, other people's opinions of me are none of my business. But going deeper into, but why do we even get caught up in that cycle to begin with? And it just starts with, oh, it's every interaction with someone, we are approval seeking, even from strangers, versus if we could just take a step back and go, no, we don't need approval. I think like indifference is great when they're an acquaintance or someone we've never met or don't know.
That's so interesting, because when I hear the word indifference, to me it has a negative connotation, and it's like, well, I'm gonna like, when you said the word, my posture stood up a little bit, because I was like, indifferent, why is someone indifferent to me? But gosh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and especially when, I mean, we don't want our partners or our closest relationships. I mean, apathy and indifference is not something that we strive for. Even, you know, in our workplaces and the work we do, we don't want to be indifferent towards it. But at the same time, it's really great when we can operate without that people-pleasing approval need that I think is what's driving the bus typically, right? Is indifference is only a bad word when we're measuring our worth on that approval and people pleasing.
And I'm just thinking, like, we measure it in terms of, you know, how many likes we get on a post or comments or whatever. Like, oh, Lisa, that's a can of worms there.
Well, and you just, like, as always, you, like, open the door for me to walk through, because I haven't listened to the Brené Brown's latest podcast with Esther Perel on virtual intimacy, and kind of talking about this whole concept of, like, this false set or of intimacy based on these, like, likes and engagement, and how we're just, like, feeling like that's the baseline and that's the standard of, like, what we're needing. Like, when we're walking around in public and in IRL, as the kids say, it's, we're, like, needing someone to tap us for likes and to give us that dopamine, versus not acknowledging us, not looking at us, and people just staying in their own lanes in their own world is not negative. It just simply is. And I think when we look at that world of, like, indifference, it's not a bad thing. People who don't know you, indifferent to me, is wonderful, because I mean, if we were looking for, like, all the hype and all the approval, I mean, the counter to that is hate, and, you know, not disagreement, but, like, you know, like, more of, like, the hate, and in the online world, all the trolls coming at people, not for conversation, but just, like, for true, like, negative hate, poor intent, right? And I just think indifference, like, it kind of feels a little bit light, you know, when you're like, oh, like, what if we just allowed people to center themselves in themselves and keep ourselves in our own lanes, in our own worlds.
This is like, you can't do that, Lisa.
I know, right? It's like, it goes against it goes against everything. Like, could you imagine, like, filling up our own worth cup? No. Right, but, you know, it's transferable across all terrains, kind of our worlds, right? When you look at whether it be, like, colleagues and just, like, friendships too, it's, we just have to allow for people to have the day that they're having and not want them or feel like they should have to perform to meet our needs too, right? It's, we know what it's also like to be the person who's like, no, this isn't the persona that I have. So no matter what, when we go out or I meet up with friends, this is the persona I'll maintain. I'm always, and then this isn't me saying all the time, but it's like, if I'm supposed to be the upbeat person, then I need to always show up upbeat. Otherwise, maybe I probably shouldn't show up. Versus, like, what if we just got to show up? And, I mean, I hate the saying it is what it is, but it actually may be just to be.
I'm just thinking, I sometimes feel pressure to be that always upbeat person, and I think it's my own fault because I'm usually pretty upbeat. But then some days you do have a day where you're just like, I just want to have a day kind of deal, but then you feel like you sort of have to turn it on. Wow. Oh, Lisa, this is it. This is really interesting.
It's exhausting, Eric.
Yes, it is.
But also remembering too that for the people who encounter you, you're right, like, you are that, and all of a sudden, so I see you, and rather than, like, the light up and the hug, which, like, I mean, you're the best for, I don't get that. For me, just to remember to go, like, that's okay. Eric can just be Eric, as opposed to, oh, is Eric mad at me? I didn't get the, like, where was that? Oh, did I do something? Did I say something? Did I? And, you know, as adults, like, we could just probably take a step back and trust that, no, like, they'll tell me. Like, if they need something from me, if I've done something, they'll tell me. Otherwise, I could just stop centering myself in their story.
Is that hard for people? Is it hard for people our age? Like, well, I turn 42 next month. Like, is it hard for us to do that?
Well, yeah. I'm like, it's, I shouldn't say for everyone, but of course, like, it's something that takes so much practice. But I think it's worth practicing, mm-hmm. right? I think that that's, like, that's where the confidence building can come from. Or even, like, going all the way back to, like, our younger kids right now. Really working on the inner dialogue that they're having. So even thinking whether you're a parent or you're an educator, or you're working with kids, you know, we're so quick to shut down their thoughts when it's like, so-and-so doesn't like me. We're like, oh, that's not true. They do so. Or like, oh, they were probably just mad at something else. Or I think the first question might be like, oh, well, that's interesting. Like, tell me the story you've told yourself. You know, or like, well, they did this. Well, why do you think they would do that? Well, I don't know. Well, why would you do that? And it's just like getting us to think past the, like, ego of like me. It's about me. I've done something or I need to fix something. And that is just those people pleasing performance tendencies.
I'm so glad you brought up kids though, because when you were talking about the kids in real life, I'm so out of touch. IRL, yes, in real life, okay. But needing that approval, like that is, I just think, and I know my wife and I have talked about this lots in terms of, I'm so grateful that I did not grow up in a world where like when I was in high school that Facebook existed kind of, because I would have struggled big time. But now like that's the world that kids are doing. So I just find it so refreshing that you say to have those types of conversations, because they are so important when kids are just being bombarded with so much stuff that's kind of virtual or online and yeah, is it in real life? I don't know. There's a lot of things there.
Oh, it's, I am glad that I mean, yes, there'll be something else in 10 years, but like, I'm grateful that my kids right now are just so little that we don't even have to figure that world out yet, you know, but I've had these conversations with my best friend who has the older kids, and it's hard because, you know, everyone's has the cell phone or everyone's using the apps, and you know, what's the right approach to take? And I mean, personally, I'm always all for harm reduction. So, I mean, abstinence of these devices, I mean, I don't know what that, you know, I don't know what that means. And that's a household choice. And there's nothing wrong with also saying no phones until this age or no phones at all, or saying, okay, yes, we are allowing phones at this age, but then there needs to be conversations. Like, it's not just like at 14, you don't suddenly develop critical thinking skills, or at 16. So I think that's the other part that we do, is we're like avoiding these, this is a whole other conversation on tense conversations and tension, but like we're avoiding conflict sometimes by like putting an age on it. Like, well, no, I said 14, it's 14. It's like, yeah, okay, but let's talk about the use. Let's talk about safe use of these cell phones and apps. And like, you know, we can blame Snapchat or TikTok, but also don't blame the app. Like, go back to the device, go back to the phone. You know, so what are we doing with the phone? Because even if they don't have the apps, they're still talking with their friends. Their friends are having access to them at all hours. Are you sending your child to bed with their phone and all those other people in their head? Like, it's so complicated. And I don't envy the parents that are in this right now, because there isn't a manual. And I will have all the studies when my kids are this age to be like, oh, but then I'll be like messing up something else. But yeah, like it's messy. And the greatest thing that we can teach, I mean, ourselves and our kids, are just like thinking for themselves, right? Like checking in with themselves and just sharing with the trusted adults on what's going on. And the adults not rescuing with problem solving or judging, but just simply holding space for them to process. Because we take that away, that agency from kids, we take it away so young.
I love how you just said rescuing, because I could see myself doing something like that with nieces or nephews, yeah, and wanting to like rescue. But yeah, like giving them the space and empowering them to do that. Well, that's so wise, Lisa.
And it is empowering, right? And I mean, it starts at a young age. It's like the 6-year-old or the 2-year-old that's struggling to do something. It is so much easier for me to just put the boot on. It is so much easier for me to just fix the Lego creation. But I need to teach problem-solving skills. Like, these are developmental, right? So let's work through the frustration tolerance. You know, after the Lego's been thrown and is broken, like, we will work together to rebuild it. But there is so much power in asking for help. And we suck, our generation, at asking for help. And so teaching our kids young that, like, oh, yeah, I'm here to help you, but I'm not just going to jump in and do the thing. First, you're going to say, I need help. And it's, I mean, I see my 6-year-old struggle with asking for help, right? And so it's like really teaching him that, like, you know, he just like stares at you and gives you the look, but it's like, what are you needing? Well, this is broken. Oh, I know, but what's the thing you're asking me? I don't understand. And then he's like, I need help. And I'm like, oh, I would love to help. And then away we go. Versus he could just like throw the thing, give me the look, and I could just fix it. But I've not taught him the skill of how to actually ask for help. And, you know, we see that now in our own lives, you know, how it's just easier to do it myself. I mean, that's my whole mantra. You can ask my husband that question.
Oh, no, I could see you asking for help. Do you not ask for help sometimes?
Well, I mean, I think it probably depends on who you ask. But no, definitely getting better. I mean, yeah. I love collaboration, and of course I love teamwork. But I mean, you add in stress, you add in pressure, you add in deadlines, you add in this, and it's like, ugh, I'll just do it, you know? And I mean, that's not the best either.
But sometimes the point guard just has to go in and get the layup, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, like, come on, go Hawkeyes. Like, Caitlin Clark's doing all the things,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
It can't be March Madness without me, like, dropping, like, Caitlin Clark at least once. And it was only once in a whole conversation.
I have one more question for you. It goes back to the word indifference, because I just find that really fascinating. How do you go about... like you said, like practicing that, like how do you go about developing that skill where you're that skill where you are okay with someone that you don't know being sort of indifferent to you and you're not worried about that? Besides listening to your wisdom right now, how do you go about developing that?
I mean, we may never be okay with it. Like it may never be comfortable to tolerate people's indifference towards us. But normalizing it for ourselves is always like that first step. And of course, like that's always been like the theme, but just even knowing that that's what's happening and saying that out loud and being like the story I've told myself, and that's been a hack of Brené Brown that I've adopted through the years. It's just like the story I've told myself. We don't know if that's true, right? So like almost observing the stories that we're telling ourselves instead of judging them. That, you know, and that's that work of mindfulness and self-compassion. But it's like, no, just observe it and be like, oh, they don't like me. It's like, okay, but what's the other thing? What's the other part of that? So if you're going to tell yourself one thing, then commit to telling yourself the other part too. It's like when you're always going to go worst case scenario, then let's also say the best case scenario and then see what happens.
I love our conversations. That was amazing.
Squad. I'm like, oh no, like it's I love our conversations too. I think you like ask the questions, you just
I just ask what's on your mind, and then we're off to the races. That was really wonderful. I hope you have a wonderful Easter. I hear you might be going to a concert.
I think I'm going to go to NoahCon with the rest of the city of Saskatoon.
I do like that he likes dogs.
Oh, see, I haven't done like as much of a deep dive on this individual as I should. So I'll definitely be going to the Google before I attend the concert.
I only know this because in a couple songs, I think he talks about his dogs. And on his album cover, there's a dog on it. So maybe, I think he likes dogs.
He's clearly a good person.
Well, yes.
Clearly.
Clearly. Have a wonderful Easter and time at the concert. And thank you for mentioning Caitlin Clark. Because for people that don't know, Caitlin Clark is an amazing... basketball player, University of Iowa.
All-time leading scorer in the NCAA history, period.
And she's going to the WNBA next year, right?
She is. Okay. Yeah, she's... So I think, what is like... I forget when the weekend is for the teams, but Illinois has first pick. So, I mean, that's where she's predicted to go.
Wow.
So I guess that's where I'll be going for a visit.
Be fun to watch her live, hey?
Yes. Next year, manifesting it now.
Heard it here first, people. Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks, Eric.